This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, this is Tim from Hide and Seek. This podcast is brought to you by Choosewell Health Insurance. While some things in life improve with time, it's unlikely your health insurance policy will. Choosewell. Compare hundreds of policy options to find the best health insurance for you at the right price. Don't spend hours researching and making confusing phone calls that leave you lost in the fine print. Hide and Seek listeners are being offered a special deal. Find a new healthcare policy with Choosewell to receive a free Joy membership, giving you benefits and rewards from Joy all year round. Stop paying for outdated cover and contact us today. Choose well. Make the switch today. joy.choosewell.com.au.
As we go along, let us study the male anatomy. Most men know less about their own bodies than they do about their automobiles.
The following feature has been rated R.
Don't panic.
This program contains coarse language.
It is recommended for people aged 15 years and over.
Are you ready? Sit back, turn up the volume, and enjoy our show.
Welcome.
Get ready for the ride.
Hide and seek.
Good evening and welcome to Hide and Seek, the show that explores sex, sexuality and self. My name is Dean Beck and a very fine evening to Tim Little.
Good evening.
It's wonderful to be with you for a change.
I know, I'm usually partnered up with the other one.
I know, and it's great to be back after a much needed rest. So we've got a great show lined up for tonight. Two very extraordinary young men, actually.
We certainly do. We've got Brandon Cook, who he crowdfunded his stint in rehab.
And received a bit of feedback from the community regarding that. We'll explore that with him a little later. And we also have Camden Tilley, who is undertaking a crowdfunding project to talk about HIV stigma and his artistic project. So looking forward to that. But before we do that, we need to congratulate you, Tim Little.
Thank you very much.
What happened on the weekend?
I became engaged.
Congratulations. Wow.
Yes. It was magical, actually. We were up at Chill Out in Dalesford, and I had planned to pop the question down on the lake, and I organised for a local lad to sing Ed Sheeran.
Get out.
So he pretty much popped out of the bushes with a guitar.
Wow.
And then I proposed on the wharf in front of the lake.
Now, this coming from someone who has been quite outspoken about gay men's desire to be heteronormative. So can I challenge you on that level? Why are you getting engaged?
Well, it's about equal rights, really. Mm-hmm. My partner and I have been together for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. In his home country in Argentina, it's actually legal for gay men to be married, but it's not legal here, obviously. And we live as though we're married anyway, and we share common things. So I wanted to express my love for him.
Well done.
And my commitment well, because we've had a bit of a roller coaster of a relationship.
Right.
And we've both worked very hard to reach this point.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you will keep us up to date with proceedings. And,
absolutely.
We will follow your journey as you head towards married life, I guess.
Thank you.
When and if we ever get to do that. But we've got to explore news now. And in Hide and Seek news, we are crossing to Adelaide to speak to Rich Watkins, who is the producer of the Chem Sex Monologues. Rich, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you're the producer of the Chemsex Monologues, a play about chemsex. Tell us about how this is different to perhaps the movie that we might have seen.
Right, so yes, the documentary about chemsex that was made a couple of years ago, I mean, it's fantastic, and it was brilliant in raising awareness, particularly in London and seemingly across the world, to this issue. What the play tries to do, however, is it tries to take a bit of a different tact. We try to look at the human stories behind the people that might be involved in this. The play itself is trying to humanize and give the kind of reasons behind this, as opposed to maybe making this into a shocking or sensational issue. We really try and understand the reason behind chemsex and also make it relatable to any kind of market. So we've had straight, female, older, younger, gay, straight, male audiences of all kinds of demographics come and see the play, and they've all responded positively, saying, "I understand more about chemsex now than I did before," which is essentially the goal.
How hard was it to portray something that is quite confronting on stage with a raw audience, so to speak?
It's a challenge every night. I open the show, and my particular monologue is at times quite graphic, but I think it's, you know, we take pride in ourselves as a community, and so anything kind of sexualized, it's just, you know, a fact, really. And I think all of us within the cast, there are four of us, three incredible actors, and then myself as well, we all take pride in what we're telling, what we're saying. And so, you know, if there is anything kind of shocking or graphic or potentially a little bit saucy for the audience, we know that the end result, the end message of the play is one of understanding and acceptance of those who are going through journeys of chemsex. And so really, once you get to the very end of the play and the kind of final message, everything makes sense. And we haven't really had anyone ever in the history of the play, both in London and here in Australia, react kind of badly towards it, which is really encouraging.
The most memorable thing about the movie was probably its confronting nature. The play, however, seems to be far more empathetic and quite humorous in spots from what I read. So how do you get a humorous side? How do you convey that in something that's really very challenging for many of us?
Yes, it's a really fine line, and the writer, Patrick Cash, has done an absolute genius thing in being able to draw some humour out of this potentially controversial and upsetting issue. So through the character of Daniel, the sexual health worker who appears in the play, we see someone who has never been to a chemsex party before, who works within the sexual health community but doesn't understand kind of the ins and outs of what people are doing every weekend and why they're doing it. And so in an experiment of kind of whatever attitude, like he goes for it, and he gets on Grindr and he finds himself a chemsex party, and the moment that he turns up, without giving too much away, but the moment he turns up with a bottle of wine in his hand and says, "Oh, hello, I'm here for the party," starts to write some humour. The audience really respond well to that, and Pat's put some really humorous episodes in his monologue. You know, the sexual health worker carrying hundreds of condoms and lube packets on his way to do community outreach, and he gets on the London Tube and there's bag bursts everywhere. And that, seeing that on stage and delivered in a comedic monologue form, I mean, it is funny. And so we really have strived every night to not just make it all about doom and gloom and heartache and concern. And let's be honest, people taking drugs, funny things do sometimes happen when you're at a party and someone's on drugs. let's be honest, people get the giggles. They do. Now, retrospectively, after the event, there might be more concerning issues to talk about, but we've tried to show that side of it.
The Chemsex Monologues is playing at the GC in Adelaide through to the 19th of March. It's part of the Adelaide Fringe Festival, and then it's heading to Sydney and playing at the Blood Moon in Sydney from the 22nd to the 25th of March. Now, Rich Watkins, thank you very much for joining us on Hide and Seek. Any chance of it coming to Melbourne?
We are hopeful. We looked at doing it this particular trip, but, you know, coming all the way from London has been an adventure in itself. but we've had such great feedback here in Adelaide, and we're looking to have a really great run in Sydney. Already ticket sales are going fantastically. So fingers crossed for Melbourne. I'm not going to promise anything too soon, but keep your eyes on those calendars in 2018 because the chances are high.
Rich Watkins, producer of the Chemsex Monologues, thank you very much again for joining us on Hide and Seek.
Thank you so much.
You are with Dean Beck and Tim Little on Hide and Seek, the show that explores sex, sexuality and self. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the program 24-year-old man who has succeeded in a crowdfunding campaign, Brandon Cook. Welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Camden Tilley, 22 years of age, who is in the middle of a crowdfunding campaign.
Thank you very much, Dean.
Both of you have had challenging stories that you wanted to get help with by the community and reached out. Brandon, let's start with yours because yours has kind of been and gone.
Yes.
And you can actually read about it to some extent in the latest issue of Star Observer, but we'll get to that later.
Yes.
Tell us your story.
My story. Oh, gosh. How many times have I told this one? Basically...
Never on this show.
Never on this show. So I'll start fresh. How's that? So basically, kind of just over 18 months ago, I was introduced to crystal meth, which, as some may know, is a particularly powerful drug. You know, in the article, I wrote about it pretty succinctly. But basically how it went was a very attractive man offered me this drug when I was at his house for a hookup. Now, I now know that attractive men are the worst because I pretty much thought... I can't say no to this man. He'll kick me out of his house. So I did the sensible, mature thing and, you know, accepted his hospitality, I guess. And, yeah, and that turned into a weekend of what I will can factually describe as pleasurable good times, because that is how the drug works. It is a powerful substance and it does make you feel good. And I ended up having a really horrible come down when I don't want to do that ever again. But midway through the next week, I felt myself going, I actually could do that again. And it became a really kind of big problem over the next 18 months and got to the point where at the start of this year, after a short period of sobriety, I kind of had a downward spiral and was like, uh-oh, I think I actually need some serious help for this one this time. Started looking into rehab clinics and, you know, private healthcare. I'm lucky enough to have private healthcare. Many have it don't. Many people are on really long public wait lists for rehabilitation. Covered the costs for a certain rehab clinic in South Melbourne, and I could not afford a gap in that cost. So I set up a crowdfund to get the help I needed. Thought I'd raise $50 maybe, and it turned out to be a little bit more. So,
what actually made you reach that point where you thought, I need to get some help here?
Well, to be honest, you know, I was getting to the point where I was kind of using several times a week. And the thing about me is that it's like, you know, there are some people who are going to take drugs and who are happy to take drugs, and that's all perfectly good with them, and that's fine. I completely understand what they're going through. I never wanted to do it, and I have some pre-existing mental health conditions such as depression and anxiety, which meant that doing this drug was doing me a lot of problems. I actually developed some really serious panic disorder as a result and couldn't really leave the house for a couple of months last year as a result of using. And yeah, I just knew that it was going to be doing some really serious damage if it kept going the way it was, and I just couldn't seem to be able to stop myself, which is, you know, how addiction works for a lot of people. So that's kind of what pushed me towards the edge there.
There are, we keep hearing about functional users. There are people that can use that, can seemingly do so and not be affected.
Yeah.
But you self-identify as one of those people who has a predisposition to something that might be of trouble.
Yeah, totally. And I know some people personally who I obviously won't name who have been users for years and have never run into problems, and some who have been used for years and have only just run into problems.
Right.
It's just the fact of the matter is if you do have a predisposition for certain mental illnesses, drugs like ice are a really horrible idea.
And even marijuana.
Well, exactly. I mean, I dabbled in my teens. I think we all have, and if you haven't, that's totally fine. You know, and yeah, that was an issue for me as well. So I just think I'm one of those people who it does not sit well with. Though I will say personally, I think that, you know, crystal meth isn't exactly a short stone throw away from marijuana. It's quite a big mountaintop ahead, and it can cause, you know, it not only can affect issues that you're predisposed to, but also cause problems of its own.
So, yeah, it's a mountaintop ahead, but then there's the valley after that. You've touched on mental health.
Yeah.
What kind of effect did that have on that?
Oh, God. Yeah, well, as I said, I developed crippling panic disorder. And when I say crippling, I mean like, I already have anxiety to begin with. I'm so medicated for it, although I am now. I wonder why. Like, I remember I was up in Brisbane for Brisbane Writers Festival because one of my friends is one of the writers that was a guest there. And we were at dinner and I started to feel this incredible horror, like a panic attack, full-blown, first ever 110% panic attack. Like, you act, anyone who's listening who's ever had a panic attack knows panic attacks, you actually feel like you're dying. The only difference between a panic attack and a heart attack is the fact that with a panic attack, you can't monitor it on an ECG or a heart scanner. It simply is a product of the mind. Well, I had my first one of those in a foreign state over dinner, and they did not stop every day for the next 2 months.
Wow.
And my anxiety got 10 times worse. It was like, it's kind of like that feeling of dread you get when something horrible is happening. It was like that every second of the day.
Did you start to, I mean, if you had them every day, you must have then start to get anxious about the fact that you might be having one again, and it sort of starts to self-perpetuate.
Yeah, exactly. It self-perpetuates. Right. It's a cycle. And, you know, eventually the dread of anxiety becomes a physical symptom.
Sure.
So you're walking around with this fear that actually feels like it's physical fear. It's crippling. It just binds to you. It's like a cloud hanging over your head. So I dealt with that for 2 months. I'd have a panic attack. I'd feel anxious. I'd get very exhausted from being anxious. So I'd just sleep all day and then I'd be depressed. And it was just a really big cycle that just kept going.
Camden, your story is a little different, but there are crossovers.
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
I would say it's pretty okay. fair.
Your story starts with an HIV diagnosis, and what happened then?
Well, I guess if it sort of starts a bit before even the HIV diagnosis, I have predisposition to a bit of mental health issues as well, and sort of before my diagnosis last year in April, I was doing quite a lot of drugs because, you know, I'd finished my degree and I was sort of like, where am I going in life? So I end up drinking drugs as sort of the way of my dealing with all that sort of thing. Didn't care about myself then. I got diagnosed, and then sort of the world felt like it shattered around me into a thousand pieces of tiny glass, which it was sort of a really tough part of my life. I lost a lot of friends. I lost quite a bit. I had to leave my job. I had to leave the job after that. I got fired from my recent job because of the health issues that I'm going through at the moment, it's just sort of been a bit difficult, to be honest. But, you know, out of that, I've been trying to do something about it, which is sort of why my project that I've been doing at the moment has been all my attention into.
You did hit rock bottom in a pretty dramatic kind of way, though.
Is attempted suicide dramatic? I don't know.
I think it's pretty dramatic.
Yeah, it's pretty dramatic, yeah. No, it's sort of... it's pretty much the pinnacle of that little hill. And then falling to your death. So in December, it just fell into a nice little, you know, melting pot. I had to leave my job. I was unemployed. I had no money. There was a threat of being actually evicted from my house. I just reached, don't know what to do anymore. And it was thankful that I had a good friend of mine. His brother came from overseas, and I'd asked my friends, could I, you know, hang out tonight? I just need someone around me. That turned the reason why. This friend was like, yeah, I'll be there. And if it weren't to him, I wouldn't really know where I'd be right now. But out of that experience, I sort of have tried to make it a more positive experience by actually creating this work and actually being able to meet people and talk about HIV and how it affects people's mental health.
So was there a lot of stigma around HIV? Is that where you had the trouble?
Internal as an external stigma. I've met people who are HIV positive who can't even talk about it themselves. I have friends who I found out later, after I made it very public to everyone that I was diagnosed with HIV, that, you know, they couldn't even talk about it. The very thought of it, like, was like, oh, sorry, no. And like, how did you know that? Like, oh, someone told me by accident, and I just want to talk to you about this. But
yeah.
And that, you know, hookups and sort of that sort of environment, it's very difficult as well. Like, you've got the stigma, you know, the unclean and dirty sort of grinder and stuff like that. You've got the generic response that people give when I tell them, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, they see you as a lesser person. Like, they're,
We're going to explore a little bit more about internalized stigma right after this. You are listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek. Wanna see you get nasty. Wanna see you shake it down, babe.
N-A-S-T-Y, you nasty boy. This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. You're with myself, Tim Little, and Dean Beck tonight.
I'm here.
We are joined by Camden and Brandon tonight.
Oh, I didn't even look at it like that. Now that you say it.
I like to rhyme things. Both have a crowdfunding campaign for different reasons, but similar.
Kind
of. There are some similarities there.
A couple of sad tweets, really.
Brandon, a question for you.
Yes.
When did you decide that crowdfunding would be something that you wanted to pursue for rehab?
I think there was actually a moment where I was like, I'm just going to get the money of everyone else sort of thing. I kind of knew that I couldn't afford it. And I suggested it to my Facebook feed. I was like, do you guys think crowdfunding this sort of thing could be an option? And they're like, yeah, like people crowdfund, you know, broken down cars, new laptops, stuff like that all the time. Like
pasta
medical
and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Medical expenses.
But
are
in
a thing.
Doing so, you open yourself up to criticism.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, so in a fragile state, yeah, which you admit yourself in being in, how do you then deal with such, you know, trolls coming at you in this space? How do you deal with that?
I mean, you just kind of do.
Right.
Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, people are dickheads, you know.
Is it about knowing within yourself what you, your authentic self, what's integral to you and what you're going to do? Is it about that?
Yes, that and the crippling desperation, Dean.
Yeah,
you know, like, I mean, I knew I needed the help. I was asking for it. I put myself out there. And at the end of the day, it's sort of like you've got to say, like, there are going to be some negative comments and people aren't going to agree with you on this issue. And especially it's something to do with, you know, private healthcare, that sort of thing. Or it's a hotly debated topic.
I've got to tell you, it takes guts to do it. Now, Camden,
it really does.
Camden, we've had a message come through on our email on air@joy.org.au saying that you have just received another donation to your HIV Me project, which we'll get to a little later.
Ooh.
But you're undertaking an artistic project. And part of that is to tell your story about HIV stigma. Much of that was internalized stigma. And certainly from what I know of your story and what we've talked about on InsideHIV.net, which you can check out the interview and the podcast there. But from what we've discussed previously, that internalized stigma seemed to be the most profound for you.
Yeah, I guess the experience that I've had, it's been very difficult because I guess from many perspectives, I wanted to talk about it. From the get-go, like I told my grandparents on my 22nd birthday, 1 week after I was diagnosed.
Happy birthday
to me, by the way. For them it was very. They're like, oh, okay, sweep it under the rug, never talk about it again. And so I didn't really have them to talk to about it. And then, you know, I was trying to talk to other people, and most people who were friends at the time didn't know how to talk about it because they just took a step back, like, oh, I don't know what to say. And so I sort of tried to start finding people who, you know, had gone through something similar. And like I was saying before, I found out some of my friends actually diagnosed. And that was the most hardest. That was just, it killed me that I couldn't even talk about it with some people that I was friends with that I knew. And so I was just like, that's not okay. But what I've found doing this project at the moment is actually been really good to actually be able to talk about openly about HIV. I mean, it's still been very difficult to actually get people to talk about it, which is the main purpose of what I'm trying to do, even if it's just like people who are on PrEP, which is good. They have a general good understanding of actually how HIV works and all that. So they're more like experienced and knowledgeable. But when it comes to people who may not be that familiar with what the virus means these days, like my grandparents, anything like that, it's very difficult to actually get to the same page.
Your project is an artistic one, and you are fully qualified, can I say?
I've got an undergraduate degree and everything.
Yeah, I just want to share this with our listening audience. That is a piece titled Birth of a Galaxy. It's an original composition.
I hate me so much.
By Camden Tilley.
But it's amazing.
An extraordinary illustration of how talented this young man is at 22 years of age.
That was at least 3 years ago, though.
I'm sitting next to Mozart right now.
Well, hopefully you're a lot better than that by now.
I hope
however,
so.
No pressure.
I think it's amazing. And so when it comes to talent, you've got it. What do you want this project to do?
Well, firstly, I think after everything that I experienced in the last year, I want it to mean something not just to me, but to a lot of people who maybe not be able to talk about HIV, whether their status is positive, undetectable, negative, whatever. But secondly, I'm sort of, since my diagnosis, the way of actually pursuing my artistic career in terms of the direction, it used to be very much what you just showed. It used to be very film scorey, very much like, I want to do film music, But it sort of moved since my diagnosis to more like cabaret and sort of installation projects that actually, you know, mean something to the public spectre, not just to me and what I want, which has been very challenging, I guess, from my perspective.
So for me, as a punter, if you will, what can I expect from one of these projects?
I'm so glad you asked that question.
I've just seen music and cabaret.
Okay. Well, it's a big mishmash of everything you can imagine. But it's a live installation project. So what that means for this one is it's music. It's actually got... I'm trying to crowdsource people's individual stories with... how HIV has affected them, like their bad experiences, specifically how it's affected their mental health. So it's a more of a community-based project. It's like my story is definitely in there, but it's not the focal point.
Sure.
So it's got music, it's got live projection art. I'm trying to get it's ongoing. It's sort of every day it's changing a little bit, but it's getting there.
Brandon, your artistic expression is through your writing.
Yes.
How healing is that process for you?
How healing is that process for me? I don't know. I mean, I've always kind of prided myself on being open about the issues in my life. I always say there's no story in my life that's so important that I can't tell it to someone. It's very healing. It's good to
is
get
Is that challenging for your parents?
I don't know if they're like, Dad asked me today, it's like, what time's the show? I'm like, you don't want to hear this one, Dad. Mum made it very clear. She said this about, you know, five times a week. She's like, I don't read your work, Brendan. I don't read your work. My stickers are all about anal. But, you know,
it's probably good that she doesn't read it.
Yeah, no, my work is not discussed. You know, stuff like this, I don't know, I'll go home and maybe they've listened to it, maybe they're not. Hi, Mum, if you're listening, you know, so yeah. It can be challenging.
Is it important to talk about this? Do you think it's being spoken about enough?
Crystal meth
use and addiction.
Absolutely.
Can I put it and quote from Brandon's writings in the current issue of Star Observer? The difference between caring for yourself in the outside world and caring for yourself in rehab is that on the outside, you can ignore your problems. You can mute the world and reject concern. Visit a counsellor once a week and say, hey, I've got a problem, only to forget their words the following fortnight from your half-hour session. Blindly declaring, I can't remember what we talked about. I didn't do the homework. But you also are very critical of people like me in this space, saying that you've seen very little other than voyeuristic journalism.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why I do think it's important for us to be able to tell our stories of our experiences, because a lot of the lens through which a lot of people have to view crystal meth abuse, especially in the gay community, is through stories being told. Now, I am a panelist on a show talking about my issues, but I'm also being given an opportunity to speak, and that's what's important. You know, all of the articles that I've read about crystal meth in the gay community in Australia anyway have been through the lens of journalists kind of looking into this seedy underworld and going,
rather than being a part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Going, oh, it's going. And like, you know, with the Chemsex documentary, for example, which, you know, I thought, as you had on earlier, you'd mentioned the Chemsex documentary earlier, you know, a lot of journalists sort of went, oh, it's so scandalous. And I think one gay journalist even referred to it as exploitative and stuff like that. But me and all my friends in recovery just looked at that documentary and went, no, that's real. Like,
That's exactly what I said in this space.
That's how it happens. That's it.
I've argued this point with certain people who've criticised the film.
Yeah.
And I've said, look, I can understand that the only missing element that I can think of was perhaps the functional user. That wasn't portrayed. But every one of those scenarios depicted I've seen. I've
it's
witnessed.
It's real. Yeah.
It's real.
And, you know, and it's, you know, and you can say that it was, if we're going to talk about the documentary now, you know, you can say that it was showing some people at their worst. But again, that is real. That's what happened. I have been in recovery for 18 months and I have seen some horrible things and been through some horrible situations. Panic, hospitalization, overdose. I've met some people who I would describe as generally bad people in these circumstances and some people who are amazing. I had one person I used with come with me in an ambulance to hospital when I'd used too much. Yeah. And like, this was a person who previously I'd thought, oh, you're gone, or you're just too far gone, one of those addict type people. I mean, you know, look at me now. But you know, yeah, so it's not exploitative and it's not sensational. It's just how it is. Mm-hmm. And it's important for people like me to be able to tell our stories because we are giving a voice to ourselves and the issue itself and making ourselves heard.
And you're localizing it. You know, exactly. I've had people come to me and say, in fact, a very senior volunteer here at Joy said, you know, when the Chemsex movie was on, isn't it good that we don't have it here in Melbourne? It's only only in London. Oh, this is the problem.
I always say to people, I say, if you don't think PNP is a problem in Melbourne, log on to Grindr in Paran on a Sunday morning. Okay? It is everywhere. Three clicks, mate, you'll get it. It's fine. How do you think I got here? Far out.
This is Hide and Seek. You're listening to Joy 94.9. Dean Beck and Tim Little with you. We are speaking to Camden and Brandon.
Yes.
And we're also saying a big thank you to Jack for his donation to Camden's crowdfunding campaign. Where can we find details about supporting your artistic project, HIV and Me?
Oh, well, if you want to know more about it, let's go to www.facebook.com/HIVme. That's one word, HIVme.
Or check out the interview I did with you at insidehiv.net, and there are links there as well. There'll also be links on the podcast page for this particular episode of Hide and Seek. We should at this point in time say that some of the subject matter that we've been talking about tonight might have been challenging for some people to hear. And if it has created issues for you, please head to Lifeline. You can phone them on 13 11 14. That's 13 11 14. They are there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And Q Life for our community is also available, 1 800 184 527. Tim.
Camden, I've got a question for you.
Oh, no.
So you spoke earlier about isolation once you were diagnosed and telling people.
Yeah.
Has this project brought you closer to the community and brought people to you that you may not otherwise have known?
Well, I can say yes and no.
Oh.
You're here, aren't you?
Oh, I know. Yes, yes, because since the project started, I've just made myself actively talk about it, and by talking about it, I've met like-minded people, and through that, been able to actually develop the project a bit more. But there's no in many senses as well, where it's sort of, there's still an isolation involved in trying to be able to talk about it. It's like,
right.
I mean, it's like bashing your head against a brick wall and, you know, getting nowhere sometimes.
Oh. It's sad.
Well,
you know, we're sad twinks. So.
Is that the truth? Jesus.
Yeah.
My heart does not bleed. we've all had to go through our challenges in life. You're just having yours now. but we're here to help.
So sympathetic, Jane Grant.
But we're here to help. Look, I think you're both very brave, and I think you're both inspirational to put it out there and to say to others, hey, look, this is the deal. Pitch in, and I think it's fantastic that you're doing it.
Thank you very much.
It means a lot.
It takes strength to be able to do it, and resilience.
You sort of learn that as you go on.
Yeah. Have you received any criticism since starting the campaign, Camden?
I haven't really received much in terms of criticism. I think the main challenge is just being able to talk about it with people. It's just the talking, like the criticism, like you get naturally every day in being HIV positive from the, you know, internal and external community online, or whether it be, you know, on the street. Not that you know, display it, but, you know, that sort of...
But don't you find the more you own it, the more that criticism just sort of bounces off?
Most definitely. Like, you build up a wall around you and sort of just start being a sassy little piece of work, you know, depending on where you are. Like, I've learned through it, being diagnosed as HIV, especially at my age, I just don't give a shit anymore what people say. I just sort of, it's just, you know, whatever these days, just get over it. I don't care. Move on.
Brandon, you're coming, there are very few people that come out about their chemsex use.
Oh.
And
glad to be one of the few.
Well, there are very few. Have you found, over and above the trolling that you got on the campaign, have you found any lasting niggles in that space?
Lasting niggles as in stigma around usage?
Yeah.
Surprisingly, not as much as I would have thought.
Right.
I mean, most of my friends kind of overwhelmingly support me, and I think that I'm kind of only just really starting to talk about my usage. In the past, I've hinted at having issues with it. Like, I think in my last time here, you talked about an article I wrote, and I actually mentioned chemsex in the article, which was a very direct attempt at trying to reference something I thought was a problem because I was secretly going through it. But no, many of my friends have been extremely supportive. Mm. I think most of the critics about my illness, I'll call it, have been surrounding the crowdfund, and that's pretty much it, because you know, there's not a lot you can say to someone who's taking ownership of something like this. You know, there's not a lot you can say that can tear them down. I'm very public about my use and my addiction. I was very public from rehab, even on social media, which pissed off a few people on my friends list. But I said there's not a lot you can say to me to hurt me at this point, you know. So no, everything's been kind of okay, surprisingly.
Good. I'm pleased to hear that.
And you're at the other end of rehab. What have you learned from that experience?
What have I learned?
Yeah. About yourself?
Firstly, crazy people are awesome. they are the
what
best.
Do you mean?
No, I met some amazing people in rehab. So what have I learned from rehab? That we don't really have the freedom to be crazy in the real world. Now, in rehab, you can be as crazy as you want to be. You can be angry and frustrated and rage out, and everyone cares for you. And everyone's, like you said about, you know, being a sassy, dark humor type person, Camden, like, that's pretty much what it is. In rehab, like, you are free to be as mental as you want, and that can be horrible.
And throw a tantrum if you want.
Yeah, exactly. Or, right, and like, okay, you know, because you're all in there for one reason, and everyone understands. Whereas in the outside world, there's kind of this expectation of sanity and just having it all together.
This, you know, illusion that you're okay.
Exactly. Like, we're in this 9-to-5 world of hard work and keeping it together. You know, the best of us are the strongest and the most capable, and we really don't give ourselves room to kind of break down.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I met people in rehab who I met an MBA Harvard graduate. I met a psychologist. I met some, you know, people who were worth millions of dollars from the businesses they run, and all they had in common, and I learned this through our groups, and we don't talk about groups outside of group, but I'm doing it anyway, so shut up.
You're not identifying people.
Exactly. Is that what they all had in common, which I found very interesting, was that they all worked themselves to the bone. They are unrelentingly unable to offload any of their work to anyone else. They say, I do the best at my job, and that's it. And they're all in there with mental health issues. Now, that's not somebody taking a piss, because I was in there as well, but there seems to be this thing.
Were they in for mental health issues or for chem
addictions?
Issues?
Well, there are different programs.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
I thought I would be going into the mental health stream, but I actually went into the addiction stream of healthcare. So I was with all the addicts, you know, just me and my alcos and my pill poppers. Good time.
Okay, so they don't put all of the crystal meth people together?
No, I was the only crystal meth person. I was the only one there at the time.
Right, okay.
High turnover. I'm assuming that maybe someone else went in when I left. I don't know. I didn't meet them. No, they've all the... Well, no, we're all on the same floor. So, like, I met people with mental health issues as well as people with addictions issues, you know. So, yeah, we're all in this together, guys.
Well, congratulations on the success of your funding campaign your rehab and continued success in that space for you.
I hope so as well. You know, one thing you learn is that it's all about life after rehab as well.
Yeah, well, and... You know, don't be too hard on yourself if you fall off the wagon. You know that's part of the process too.
Yes.
Camden, all the very best to you for your crowdfunding campaign. Give us that link once again, if you would.
www.facebook.com/HIVme. That is HIVme, one word.
And there'll be links on the podcast.
I love these shameless plugs.
Today's episode of Hide and Seek. Lifeline is there for you, 13 11 14, and QLife 1800 184 527. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us on this show.
Thanks, thank you very much, Dean.
Dean Beck and Tim Little with you on Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek. Joy 94.9.
At Joy 94.9, there are approximately 300 volunteers bringing you over 75 shows, 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. That's a lot of facts and figures to take in, but here's one more number for you to think about. 1-300-569-949. That's the number to call to talk to the Joy sales team about becoming a Joy sponsor. One phone call can get your business on air and online, reaching thousands of Joy listeners at a price you can afford. 1-300-JOY-949. That's 1-300-569-949.
Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Dean Beck and Tim Little saying goodbye.
Good night.
And farewell till next week. Great show today, and a big thanks to both Camden and Brandon, who I reckon are pretty bloody brave to be able to come on and speak about their lives at such young ages in such raw and open ways.
Not only that, but putting it all out there on social media. Yeah. We all know the pitfalls and dramas of that.
We sure do. Hey, thank you for tonight. It's been great.
Very welcome.
Till next time, keep well, take care. Bye for now.
Hey, this is Tim from Hide and Seek. This podcast is brought to you by Choosewell Health Insurance. While some things in life improve with time, it's unlikely your health insurance policy will. Choosewell. Compare hundreds of policy options to find the best health insurance for you at the right price. Don't spend hours researching and making confusing phone calls that leave you lost in the fine print. Hide and Seek listeners are being offered a special deal. Find a new healthcare policy with Choosewell to receive a free Joy membership, giving you benefits and rewards from Joy all year round. Stop paying for outdated cover and contact us today. Choose well. Make the switch today. joy.choosewell.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.